This Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS, the gold standard in the rare coin grading industry. Visit PCGS.com to learn more. Were Morgan dollars about to be minted in 1964? We find out by talking to Q. David Bowers next on the Coin Week podcast. So, Dave, it seems like this week you've been making some news regarding recent discoveries at the United States Mint.
Well, we went there as a research group. It's interesting. We did see undiscovered, unknown to us, what you call hubs or hub dies, not working dies, that were either used to make working dies for 1964 dated Morgan dollars, or else someone thought about enough to make, steel cylinder hubs that, took a while to do, and also for peace dollars of 1964. These were completely unknown to me, and of course I've been in the Mint, I've been in the Mint 101 times in my life, but I think these have just recently been discovered. A lot of things have not been checked. They have two very fine archivists, professional archivists, not numismatic archivists, who are working on the Mint's things. We gave them, Whitman sent them some books, including the Judd book, so they could help identify, there are some patterns and things that were never used. These are in forms of galvanos, not coins. Whitman's been trying to help out as much as we can, and also, we tried to help the Mint in any way, shape or form, but this was a very nice discovery, and it was sort of spectacular. We weren't expecting it, and it was really neat.
Did you get to closely observe the specimens?
Yes, I actually touched them or was two inches from them. I mean, these were right in front of us. They weren't at a distance. They were in a container, face up, and Dennis took some pictures of them. They were, we could have spent all the time we wanted to with them.
Was it your impression that these were done up anew? I mean, these weren't from the 1921 Morgan Dollar Master Hubs, were they?
No, these are of the older design, which was supposed to have been destroyed. They also have other archival hubs and things that I didn't know they had, and I don't think they know they had that. They probably haven't been completely cataloged yet, but the Mint did, in its infinite wisdom, make backups in case they needed to use them so they didn't have to start all over again. But in 1964, and I have seen no documentation of this, there probably is documentation somewhere, but not sorted. There must be something saying, okay, person A, will you make up hubs for a 1964 peace dollar and a 1964 Morgan dollar? We don't know what we're going to do, but it's easier to use an old design or something like that,
I mean, is it your impression that they wouldn't have gone into the production of Morgan dollars without authorization from Congress allowing that?
Well, I suppose the Mint could have, you'd have to make working dies, then you'd have to put them in a coining press. Then you'd have to, the Mint all the time makes, trial impressions of different things to see how they look. Whether this was done, I don't know. But I know in talking to Frank Gasparo, who was a good friend of mine for many years, he never mentioned these. Of course, I didn't ask him about them. But if it had been something that was important and, Frank Gasparo was there at the time. He was an assistant, and of course Gilroy Roberts was the chief engraver at that time. And I did not know Gilroy Roberts. I met him, but I think if they had been important, where they had actually made some and held them in their hands and so forth, he would have known about it, or he would have mentioned it, because I certainly have asked him 101 different questions over the years. So my guess is these were made up on a routine basis with the idea They wanted to make some more silver dollars. Because no silver dollars had been made since 1935, and there was a call for them, like from the Las Vegas casinos and things. So they wanted to do that, and of course, in 1964, they did make silver Kennedy half dollars and silver everything else. But then, you know, as you probably know from reading Fern Miller and the Denver Mint and everything, the Denver Mint actually did make them, but then the international price of silver was going up, almost every week. And so they said, okay, we're not going to release them. And I used to make the 1964 peace dollars in Denver would have been made in Philadelphia and had de-stamped stamped in them individually. That was, at that time, Michael Iacocca was the person who stamped the mint marks in, and he would have done that for the working dies. But, I just never thought to ask.
Did you get a sense looking at the peace dollar hub what the 1964 D peace dollar might have looked like?
These are hubs and master die. If I remember correctly, there are two sets. There's one in relief and then one in intaglio. These were definitely not working dies, and of course they wouldn't have had D mint marks because the hubs wouldn't have D mint marks. But working dies would be able to be transferred from these and made, and we know that at least one pair of working dies was used in Denver. I mean, there must be some record somewhere that they made, and as I said before, 20 pairs of working dies for each mint or something, I don't know. And also, and this is pure speculation, but, in 1962, 3, and 4, and so forth, and, I was pretty much there when they did that. Silver dollars were used in Las Vegas on the gaming tables, okay? And toward the end of 1963 and 64, most of the silver dollars on the gaming tables were 1921s because they were the ones that really had no insignificant numismatic value. I mean, dealers, when they said they want to buy, they'd say, I want to buy a bag of 1,000 silver dollars. They'd almost always say, except 1921 Morgan. So my guess would be that sensing a demand for the casinos and not really realizing the price was going to go up beyond face, the logical place to have made them would have been in Denver because it's closer to Las Vegas. San Francisco Mint wasn't making coins then. And so maybe Denver is the only mint that got working dies. I don't know. I think Dennis and I will try to find that out. But on the other hand, if the papers have not been organized and sorted, we have no way of finding them until the archivists, maybe in the regular line of business, come across them. The Mint has a tremendous amount of correspondence, and I've seen a lot of it myself, between engravers like Wyman in 1916 and Brenner, that has never been published. It's not necessarily numismatically dynamic, but it goes back and forth typically to say, well, we're looking at the models today, and are you coming to Philadelphia to check them out and things like that, everything in carbon copy. But what they had in 1964, I just don't know.
So who are you with? Describe for me, set up the story. So you're there at the Mint with Dennis, and you're there with...
For many years, Dennis and I, we've made a policy of visiting. There are four operating mints at the moment, okay? Of visiting them all, with official permission, detailing all their operations, photographing things, taking notes, and so forth, sort of archivally for Whitman Publications, which is quid pro quo, because a new book it's in print in the press now. It's all about the mints and what each mint does and how it is. There's never been a book like this, and I wrote it, and it'll tell all about how all these mints started, but it also goes into private mints like the USSA Office of Gold and the one up in Oregon. It's all about mints, public and private, that made circulating coins, and there will be a wealth of information about the mints that has never been in print before in any single publication. You know, what they do and what was and how they, you know, how they move things around and how certain things are packaged in San Francisco and others someplace else, and you know, a lot of detail. And I've been doing this for quite a few years, going back into the 1960s. You know, I used to go to the Mint, and then under Donna Pope and Mary Brooks, former Mint directors, you know, I went with cameras and took notes on, for example, the design of the Susan Anthony dollar and the design of the Eisenhower dollar. And I published a lot of this stuff already. But, you know, I was one of the, maybe the only person in numismatics that, you know, packed up, and sometimes I took a camera person with me and made trips to actually document things. I mean, any number of people went to, say, first strike ceremonies or something. But, yeah, I was very interested. For example, I used to know Mike Iacocca. You know, I remember Mike once said he put mint marks on coins, and he said, you know, would you like to put a mint mark on a Roosevelt dime reverse? I said, oh, sure. So I did that and punched it in by hand. And I said, what I should have done is put it in the wrong position. Or put it upside down or something. I'm just kidding.
So set up the story. Why were you at the Mint when you discovered the 1964 Morgan dollar working hubs?
We were on a trip to the Mint. I don't remember whether we went taking pictures on the coining floor or not. One thing I wanted to do is to look at some of the archival material that I had looked at earlier but hadn't had a chance to study in detail. And also to photograph, yeah, because they have tons of stuff. You know, it was one of a number of trips I've made to the Mints over the years, but it wasn't because we thought we were going to find anything special.
So when you made the discovery of the 64 Morgan and Peace Dollar materials, what was going on that day?
When looking around, here again, we've helped the archivists identify things like this is by Charles Barber or something, you know. I don't remember exactly. They might have said, hey, we have some other things that aren't classified over here, because we went to a separate room, and we went there, and I had not been there before. But when going there, they would not have said, well, we have things that you haven't seen that you'll be amazed at. They just said, well, we have some more things over here. Yeah, it was very... very low key, and we pointed out to them, the archivists, that these, you know, when they got to these, you know, they wanted, if they write them up and photograph them and so forth, they'd be happy to help them with some technical information. You know, I mean, ideally for the Mint and the Mint history, if they ever, you know, puts this on the internet or something, it'd be nice to know, for them to know what was going on. You know, the archivists who are professional archivists, like you would. You know, we call up a professional archivist by looking and, say, asking a museum for a reference or something, are not numismatists. They're very fine ladies, but they're not numismatists. So we were, you know, trying to help them out, giving them information to the extent that they were ready to receive it. They were not ready at that time to say, okay, we're going to drop everything and start making notes over here, because they were still back in their main area. You know, they have hundreds and hundreds of things.
At what point did you realize you were looking at something remarkable?
Well, I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff remarkable, very on. And going back a number of years, I remember in the 1960s and so forth, seeing a model for a half dime, silver half dime, to be made during World War II with a Franklin design on it, sort of like the later Franklin half dollar. Because, you know, they didn't want to use nickel. And I also am the editor of the Judd Pattern Book. But, you know, the pattern book, ideally someday, Judd version, we now have 10 in print, Judd version 11 might be, okay, in coordination with the Mint staff, we're going to, illustrate a number of Galvanos and plasters of unaccepted designs. Now, did you get my book on small dollars?
Yes, I got the book at the ANA show, which is actually the first place where I saw that you had found the $1964 dollar. It's a great book.
Well, if you look at that, you'll see a lot of stuff like proposals for Susan Anthony dollars that were never used, you know, different reverses and different Eisenhowers, a whole bunch of stuff that has never been published before is in there. And that's the sort of thing they have more of. I mean, if I were to, I suppose, write a book on commemoratives or something, I could find unadopted commemorative design in there, any number there in metals, which is a little bit beyond my expertise. But I mean, there are many metal plasters and things, metals I've never knew existed. Maybe they never did exist, you know.
I mean, it truly has the potential to be an art museum when you think about it.
Well, it's not set up yet in a museum. Well, they were planning to do that. They did open their visitor center a few years ago where you can come in and see a nice thing. You know, I don't know what their plans are. I mean, you can't, you know, it's a government agency, and whether they would plan to have, for example, Galvanos in their visitor center and a changing exhibit, I don't know. It also, you know, also have to ask how many people are interested. I mean, numismatists are interested. But if 100,000 people visit the Philadelphia Mint Visitor Center, how many people would even recognize the name of Charles Barber, you know? I mean, I don't know, but they probably go on, like, what's most popular. Like the Smithsonian Institution, you know, cleared out the National Numismatic Collection. At one time, they wanted to put in audio animatronic baseball figures like Babe Ruth. And they're, you know, what are people interested in? So, depending on the leadership of the Mint and the Treasury Department and their budget, you know, they could do a lot, or they could partner with the National Numismatic Collection, but there's not enough room in the National. You know, it's a very small facility, so I don't know. If they asked me or asked Whitman, like, you know, we'd like to mount an exhibit, educational exhibit, we would say, yes, we're at your service, absolutely free of charge, and do that. But, you know, we don't know what their plans are, and you know, I mean, you really know as much as I do at this point.
You know, it just astonishes me to think about what has to be there, you know, buried away, and what's yet to be discovered by the outside world.
There have been many eureka moments in looking through Galvanos and things, where you say, "Oh my gosh, you know, I didn't know that." You know, they made it. Well, the small dollar thing is the dollar book. You know, all those things are, you know, like putting Eisenhower on instead of a Susan Anthony on a dollar. They made up Galvanos of that with the little 11 sided inside thing. You know, I mean, no one knew that before. It's published for the first time. But I think anyone interested in modern dollars would say, hey, isn't that neat? And there are pictures of Sacagawea with and without initials in the book, and in an ornate blouse and in a non-ornate one, you know. And if someone had motivation, well, put it this way: if I had a month to spend down there with a camera person and a note taker, and there would be a market for the book, you could put out a 500-page book on interesting mint, you know, proposals, trivia, things that never were, you know, whatever.
Well, it's truly an important discovery when you consider that no coin in contemporary American collecting is as mainstream and popular as the Morgan dollar. And to discover something so recent and yet still unknown, that's quite exciting.
The Morgan dollar, by any evaluation, is the most popular early numismatic series. I mean, it's probably not as popular as modern Lincoln cents, but any older numismatic series, it outshines Barber coins, Liberty Seated coins, Indian cents, you name it. And also because they're available, you know, there are nearly 100 different basic varieties available, most of which are available in Mint State. You know, they're immensely popular. I mean, the Guidebook of Morgan Dollars, which is about to come out, is in, I think, the fifth edition or whatever it is. But, you know, countless thousands of copies have been sold. If it had been a guidebook of 20-cent pieces or something, probably half the first printing would still be in storage, you know. So Morgan dollars are very, very popular. So anything having to do with Morgan dollars is much, much more popular than something having to do with, like, say, half dimes or whatever.
Well, I'm pretty sure that the upcoming edition of the Bowers Guide to Morgan Dollars is going to be a great seller, not least of which will be due to this discovery.
We really appreciate your interest, by the way. It's really remarkable how interested you are to, you know, scout out stories and track things down. I mean, you are a real asset to numismatics on your own.
Well, Dave, I'm flattered you'd say that, and thank you. And also, thank you for bringing this story to our attention and spending some time this afternoon as our guest on the Coin Week podcast. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends. And remember, you can download all of Coin Week's podcasts for free from the iTunes Store. For Coin Week, I'm Editor Charles Morgan, signing off. Happy collecting.